Welcome, everybody, to Season 3 of the Tipsy Unicorn Podcast. My name is Abigail Twyman. I am a humanistic behavioral scientist, creative writer, and data-driven optimist. We are coming to you today from Knockety Bay, Alaska, on Prince of Wales Island, and we are in Tlingit Ani, which is the traditional homelands of the Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian people. This season, we are going to be featuring homeschool families from around the world to celebrate successes and learn lessons together. Our first guest today is Lissy Campbell. And Lissy, could you go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you and your family?
Hi, I'm Lissy Campbell. I live in Indiana. We are just about 50 miles southeast of Indianapolis. I live out here with my husband, and we have six children, four of whom are grown, and we have my niece that lives with us. So we have seven children all together. I homeschool, and I teach in a co-op. I serve in my church, and I think that's all I can think of right now.
Cool. Well, welcome. We're excited to learn a little bit more about you and your journey. So could you tell us a little bit about your homeschool journey so far and what drew you to homeschooling versus public or special education?
Yeah. And so our story is a little bit unique. I actually, we've been in both worlds. My sons were in public school, and public school is actually what drove us home. I'll start with my 12-year-old son. He was in a program called First Steps, which is home-based therapy here in Indiana, working on different things. And when he turned three, he aged out of the program. And they came in, we had a meeting. They said, you know, he has to go to another structured program. And I did not know my rights. I was just trying to figure out motherhood at this point still, and motherhood with an autistic child. And so I signed all this paperwork, and the school got in contact with me in the spring. We had an IEP meeting. I had to sign a whole bunch of more stuff that I didn't understand. And then he started school in the fall. And when we had our first parent-teacher conference in October, I had a lot of questions, because the things they were telling me he couldn't do were things that we had been working through in therapy and at home, and that I knew he could do. And so our 15-minute parent-teacher conference turned into like an hour and a half parent-teacher conference, and I left with more questions than I did answers. And a couple days after that, they called me at home and they said, we want permission to put your son in a Rifton chair. And if you're not familiar with what a Rifton chair, it's kind of like a high back wooden chair, like a high chair base, and it can have a tray and straps. And they said, we want to restrain him for 55 minutes, and then we'll let him have a 5-minute break, and then going back in the chair. And he was at school for 4 hours. And I said, no, I don't agree with that. You know, he has no physical reason to do that. It made me uncomfortable with the preschool. And I started checking up at the school, because the school you would go to, where I would go to pick him up, it had a door and you could see in. And when I would go to pick him up, one of the aides would run over and pull the blinds down so that we couldn't see in. So I started doing surprise visits. And one day I walked in and they had him fastened in this chair that I had not given them permission to use. And he was slumped over and it kind of incoherent. And around that time, he started having seizures. And I had an immediate bad feeling about it. So I took him out of school, and he was only three. And the compulsory age is 7 here in Indiana. So I thought, okay, we have some time. And I will say, once we left school, the seizures stopped. We've never had them again. So I don't know what was, if it was stress induced, maybe. So I found a program the next year. I put him in that. It was in a different county. And we loved the program. We were thinking, okay, you know, that was, it was just not right for us. When it got time to enroll or look at going into kindergarten the next year, I went in and I toured the different classrooms with the special ed director. And she said, since your son's nonverbal, he doesn't qualify to be in the regular classroom and he doesn't qualify for pullout services. He'll have to be in the special education classroom. And at that time, our speech therapist was telling us, you know, as the more language he can hear used, the better. And they said the other kids in the class were nonverbal. That was one of my concerns was, you know, how will he have opportunities to interact with other kids? And they said, well, if parents of the neurotypical children, or they said normal neurotypical children, will sign a permission slip, they're allowed to talk to your child. And it just, it felt really horrible. And I told them that we were not interested. So at that point I was preparing to homeschool. And then over that summer, a charter school opened up here close to my home. And I had been very vocal on social media about what our experience had been in the school system. And the president of the school board for the new charter school reached out to me and made me all these promises about how wonderful it would be if I would bring him out there. And so I put homeschooling on the back burner again. And I'm sure at this time, anyone listening has got to be rolling their eyes at me like, what are you thinking going a third round? But we went for that. And the first year, the school was just, they were not prepared to deal with students, just any students, really. It was so new. And they went in without a plan, and they were definitely not prepared to deal with a child with any kind of challenges. So I took him out in February of 2016, and he would have been in the middle of first grade at that point. And my other son, he was 3 at the time. He was in their early preschool program at the same school, and he was kicked out for behavioral issues. So that's where we officially started our homeschool journey.
Wow, what a journey. And you know, you said you might have some people rolling their eyes, but I think what I'm feeling right now is just such deep sadness for your family, because this is sadly such a common occurrence for families, that they try and they trust that they're putting their children in the, you know, in the best situation, and they're, you know, the people who have the training and the support to do what's right by the kids. But sounds like you've experienced something that many families have across the country. So that was quite a journey to get you to, you know, to make that final decision to get into the homeschool world. And so that was, you said 2016. So that's been about 5 years now.
Yeah.
So how has the process been for you since then? So now you have your two children that you're homeschooling.
So the process, when we took them out of school, I had to leave work. And so we went down to one income. So I had two children at home now with disabilities. And I didn't, I don't think I've talked about my youngest. My youngest, who's 8 now, was 3 at the time. He had a feeding tube. He was, we're not sure exactly what his issue was with, it was muscular issues, but we were in leg braces looking at a wheelchair for him, and it was just round the clock. Therapy's coming in, and at that time, Indiana went through where we lost a lot of therapists. So where we were used to getting with my first child, we had someone in our house 5 days a week, sometimes two or three therapists a day. We lost the access and we were only seeing a therapist once every 2 weeks. So we were trying to figure out how to navigate what to do therapy wise. And then with the loss of income, I kind of had to put together my own curriculum, I guess. And I had no idea what I was doing. And I was telling someone the other day, now that things are changed, you know, and I have the access to get what we need, sometimes I almost wish I could go back to the simplicity of what I started with, because I look back in, you know, my Facebook memories and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, that was so fun. And, you know, now we've moved past that. And so I kind of get nostalgic for that sometimes. But it was nice because we had flexibility, but at the same time it was challenging because we're not in a large community of homeschool families out here, and especially not ones with neurodiverse children or children with physical disabilities. So I didn't really have a community that I felt I could reach out to, or I didn't know it yet. We do. We have one now. I wish I would have found them sooner.
Well, it sounds like you and your family have been through a lot on this journey. And, you know, hindsight is always 20/20, looking back and, there's always room for improvement, but it sounds like you're and your family are on a good path now. So can you tell me a little bit about where you guys are at now with your homeschool journey? You said that you're teaching for a co-op and you're 5 years into this journey. And it sounds like you might have been able to connect with some families who have neurodiverse children. So you have some more support and connection with others.
So I feel like we're in a much better place, and I have had time now to learn my children and how they learn best. And it is complete opposites. So our homeschool day looks, my older son, he really prefers a regimented schedule and book work, and let's just read the material, and very straight laced. Then my younger son is very creative, and he has to work with his hands to understand it. And he absolutely resents any kind of workbook or any kind of reading that he has to do. So I have to totally separate our day to accommodate both of their learning styles. And we did find a co-op about 20 miles from our house. And we only go once a week there, but it gave them an opportunity to have friends, which is something that with my older son being in public school, he really missed that once he was taken out. He kept asking me, he would bring his iPad to me and he would show me friends, and he would get really upset with me and want to know when he would get to see his friends again. And so I think we joined with the co-op in 2018, and that has really eased down his anxieties now, because he's able to participate, and there's no, one of the things I love about a co-op in a homeschool setting versus public school is he's not separated from kids in his age group. Everybody's in there together. He has an opportunity to be a typical kid. And I feel like some of that was denied to him early on.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so sad to me to hear that story. And like I said, it's a story that's sadly so common, because I'm trained as a special education teacher, you know, in public education setting. And, you know, the way that we were trained and the guidance that we, you know, that I got as a trainee was all about inclusion and support and meeting, you know, meeting the kids and the families where they're at and helping them build those those bridges and those connections with others, and, you know, not being restricted access from their same age peers. And so, but, you know, the ideal theoretical model that they present in, you know, teacher training programs is so grossly different from what we actually see that, you know, in like that is actually in reality in the public school system. And so I think that, you know, your story, like I said, is so reminiscent of other people's stories. So now that you all have kind of found your groove as a homeschool family and found some connections so you can get those social opportunities and build relationships with others, what do you feel has been the biggest benefit to your family, and how have you been able to celebrate successes? Like what successes do you feel like you've had, and how have you been able to celebrate those together?
Okay. So that's another interesting story. I would say, okay, so I'll start with the benefits part here. The number one benefit I have is the flexibility. When we were in public school, if something wasn't working and we needed to make a change, we had to talk to at minimum 5 different people. We had to have a meeting. There was the mountain of red tape and paperwork. At home, if something's not working, I just stick it in the filing cabinet or later, maybe never, and we go on searching for the thing that does work. So I love that I don't have so much stress invested in a process, and we move along and we find what works. And the second benefit is knowing where my kids stand. Before I would get a short note, or they would send me reports from school that were very difficult to understand if you don't know the terminology, which changes every time they change with a new testing program or whatever. So oftentimes, even though I would get communication, I didn't fully understand. And again, the time invested just to track down who could even answer the question for me. So at home, I mean, I know if my child is struggling in reading or math or whatever it is, and I can find a resource to help us, or I can spend extra time working on that. So I feel like we move along faster, and that's so important because my children were already behind when I started their educational process. So I feel like this is helping us get caught up. And the biggest success is for my oldest son, for my 12-year-old, the biggest successes were when I took him out of school. He was nonverbal and he was in pull-ups and needing to move into like an adult size. And we were able to get him potty trained in the first 3 months that he was home, or toilet trained. He is fully verbal now, whereas they told us he would only know 150 words lifetime max. He's fully verbal. He reads and performs academically at a 5th grade level, which is right where he should be. It's more than I could have ever asked for. It's more than what every therapist, doctor, teacher ever told us to expect. And then for my youngest son, who had a lot of physical disabilities, we were out visiting family, and someone had opened a door. They were framing a deck, and we were in the upper part of the house. Someone opened a door, and he actually took a fall. It wasn't very far. It was maybe 8 to 10 feet. And I still see this in my dreams. It was horrible to stand there and watch. And, you know, my husband ran down and my son, who was not walking yet, met him walking around the corner. We were stunned. I took him to 3 different hospitals that night. And I'm like, listen, this child doesn't walk and he's walking. Something's not right. And we had therapists in all the next week. And he was released from therapy 3 weeks later. And he's completely mobile now. And no one can really give me a good explanation as to why or what happened in that fall. That they said maybe possibly resetting the stones in his ears did something. But yeah, I mean, we are not facing near the battle that we once were.
That is incredible. Wow. So what I'm hearing in your story is a lot of, you know, what I see with the families that we work with is, you know, many families get, you know, they'll get a diagnosis when their kids are young, you know, around, you know, before 3 years old. And they know that there are some challenges, and you enter into a system, right, into the early childhood system, into the public education system. And, you know, they're there and they're designed. There's the intention behind them is to support families and support children in their development, to get them the extra supports and educational services, therapeutic services that they need, so they can have the highest potential, right, to meet their goals. But what I hear you saying is that it felt like a little bit of smoke and mirrors, right? Where it's like they said they were going to be able to do something, but they weren't able to do it. And where, you know, you should have been getting, you know, all of these additional supports and services, where you said you had therapies 5 days a week, and then it went down to once every 2 weeks. And so you weren't getting necessarily the support that you needed, but you were able to take the power back into your own hands. And it sounds like you have been able to have some tremendous success because you can flexibly meet the needs of your kids and really meet them where they are. So what supports have you been able to access that to get you that support? Or how have you managed to navigate this journey?
Well, once we lost access out here, due to staffing with the therapist, and then also insurance is a battle. I'm sure you've heard from many other families. They just won't cover therapies, or at least not long-term to where they would be beneficial. We had to stop our therapies. And I really panicked about that in the moment because I thought, you know, I'm failing my children, you know, everything I've been told, you know, they'll only be even mildly successful if you do these 110 things. And when we were forced to break from those services, it actually gave me time to have clarity and think about what we were doing. And I realized how much I was being pulled in so many different directions, because our therapy was not a team effort. I had therapists coming in from sometimes 7 different organizations, and they weren't working collectively. So I would be told one thing, and then the next person in the door behind them would be telling me something entirely different. So once I had everyone not talking in my ear, and I could sit and observe and try different things without judgment. And I say judgment because when I would say, hey, I noticed this week, you know, we tried it this way and we had a success, I would have a therapist say, well, we really don't want you to do that. We really want you to continue on the way that we're trying to do this. We need everything to be, we need you to continue with our plan. So I felt like I had no freedom to try other avenues. But once I had the peace to stop and think, I was able to take the best parts of what we had learned and then incorporate, I guess, what you would say, mother's intuition, and then just trial and error. And I mean, that's where my kids had huge gains. And as far as a support system, for me, that was something I lacked for a really, really long time. And my family did not really know how to support. I mean, they were definitely our close family and they loved us, but they didn't really know how to help. This was all new to them too. So the co-op helped. There are not many other families over there who are facing the same challenges that we were, but just to have someone that was at least 50% in the situation, as far as they're a homeschooler and a stay-at-home mom, and just understand some of the basic challenges, that was enough support for me to be able to pull myself through and to then pull my kids through.
That's so wonderful. It's wonderful that you've been able to kind of be empowered, you know, find that empowerment by slowing down and taking a step back and really listening to your kids, right? And listening is more than, you know, they have to say something. You're like you mentioned, you're sitting back, you're watching, you're observing, you're slowing down, and you're really trying to identify what it is that they need and how you can provide that to them. And it's so interesting to me to hear comments like that from therapists who are, you know, again, we're supposed to have the family's best interest in mind. We're supposed to, you know, the families are the ones who are leading or should be leading the therapeutic process, because you are the ones that are supposed, you know, that are, you know, have the job of raising your children. And, you know, the therapists are only there for a small amount of time. And so I'm sorry that you had that experience, but I'm so happy to hear that you were able to navigate through that and listen to your mother's intuition and find the path that best met the needs for your family and navigate all of that. So what, Lisi, what are you most proud of in relation to your homeschool journey?
That's a tough one to answer. I mean, I'm proud of my children just for, I can't find the word. My children were very patient with me as I grew into the parent that they needed me to be. And my children are very forgiving of the mistakes that I made along the way. And I'm proud of the people they are and how they've let that shape them, not to, they're very resilient. I'm proud of how resilient they are and the attitude that they face this world with. I'm not really proud of me or anything I've done. I'm proud of them because they probably got the worst end of this deal as I had to figure these things out.
But in that is your, you know, your role in their story, in their resilience, in their strength, is that you were that model for them. Like, you modeled what it means to never settle. Right? Never settle for not good enough or anything like that. You kept seeking answers. You kept moving forward. You kept, you know, I'm sure it wasn't always, you know, it's not always puppies and rainbows and, you know, it when nothing was
never.
but, you know, being able to demonstrate that for them at such a young age, right, is giving them a model of what they, you know, that they can carry forward into their adulthood and be that, you know, be that same pillar of strength for their families one day. So yes, be proud of your children and their resilience and their strength. And I encourage you to take some ownership of that, that you have, through all of this, been, you know, been a wonderful model for your children and what it means to stay strong and keep moving forward despite the challenges, despite people not believing you or not trusting in you, and or, you know, second guessing your decisions as a parent. So that's beautiful. Beautiful. Thank that you, you. Give the props to your kids too. I love that. So Lisi, I really appreciate you sharing your story with us. And, you know, I think that there are a lot of families out there who are going to hear what you've shared, and it's going to resonate deeply with them. And hopefully give them some, you know, empower them and give them some strength to carry on. So what advice do you have for other homeschool families of neurodiverse children who might be experiencing the same things, or maybe they haven't taken the chance yet to, you know, move into the homeschool realm, but after hearing your story might have the power to take that step?
Well, okay, I would say a few things. Don't ever feel guilty for saying no. I wish I had said no at age 3 with my first one. It is okay to say no. It is okay to disagree. It is okay to take more time to fully understand the process. And if you are in a situation that is going to be supportive and beneficial for your child, they are going to want you to have access to all of your options. And take time for your family. And I can't stress enough how beneficial it was to have that peace. And I feel like when you have a neurodiverse child, there are always so many people telling you what your next move should be or has to be if you want that child to be successful. And it's okay to take that time away and just truly think and, you know, look at your situation. And then for those who are already in the homeschooling world, I would say, you know, going back to the drawing board, so to speak, is not a failure. I've been back to the drawing board many, many times. And every time something good has come out of it, even if it's just a minor change, even if you're scrapping the whole entire whatever you're doing and starting over, you know, don't let that be, no matter how many times you have to do it, don't let that be your discouraging factor. And let your child take the lead. I think we have a tendency, especially in the autism world, to structure everything. And I can see where my child benefited at times, but I saw where he grew when I let him take the lead and I empowered him to make some of the decisions for himself and challenged him, challenged them both, even when it was hard. You know, I want you to keep trying, you know, even if it upsets you, it's okay. We can work through that, but you still have to keep trying, having that fighting spirit.
I love that. That is a beautiful note to end on. Keep having that fighting spirit, and keep, you know, keep moving forward. And you didn't know this, I don't think, but you actually teed us up perfectly for our announcement for our workshop this Friday. This is our second to last Finding Our Hearts workshop. And our focus this week is actually going to be on improving the quality of your homeschool program by incorporating more self-directed education. So it sounds like that's something that you've done with your own children, is following their lead, identifying what their interests are, and help them develop through identifying what works for them and what is most meaningful to them to help them grow into the people that they want to be. So thank you so much, Lisi, for coming on our podcast today. I've learned a lot, and I've been inspired and empowered, and I hope that others who are listening have been as well.
Thank you for the opportunity to share our story.
You're very welcome. Take care.